We got Exodus 7 through 9 today. Moses has a command for Pharaoh, let my people go. And he didn't make that up. He got that command from God. Chapter 7, what we have here are Moses, the magicians, and the miracles. You have a real question, and I'm sure Pharaoh's got this in his mind. Who do we believe? Because here you have this group of Hebrews, and you have this group of very powerful, rich, religious people. Very religious people. We would say these people are good because they go to their temples and they're good people and they're religious and they believe in their gods. Moses is coming to speak for Yahweh, and in chapters 8 and 9, the signs show us that. All signs point to Moses. And the question is, do you accept Moses? If not, you're not just rejecting Moses, you're rejecting God. And can you really defy God's will? That's the question that comes up in chapters 8 and 9. So all signs point to Moses, and his message is true. So in 7 through 11, here's the broad sweep. Moses is God. This is through all these chapters, 7 through 11, and Aaron is his prophet. What that means is the prophet is a spokesman that declares God's plan and will. Now remember how this is set up. God says, Moses, you tell Aaron, and Aaron will tell Pharaoh. Moses is the first person in the Bible to work sign miracles. He's also the first prophet. Now you're going to go, wait a minute, you just said Aaron was a prophet. What do I mean by first? But when I say first, what do I mean by first?
Preeminent.
Moses is supreme in his eminence as prophet. There is no greater prophet now as we come into the Old Testament than Moses. So you have this, the older serves the younger. Aaron's the older brother. God says he's your prophet, but he's going to serve Moses eventually. Because what's going to happen? He has authority over Aaron. We already know that. But eventually he does take over as spokesman. See, what's firstborn mean? The one who comes first? No, it's the preeminent one. What's hardening then? Because we're going to see a lot about hardening in these chapters. What's hardening? It's an attitude that rejects God's plan and will. And where have you heard God's plan and will? From the Word of God, which comes through Moses. God told Moses that you will know I am Yahweh from what I do. The Egyptians are going to end up learning the same thing, because in 7 through 11, they're going to see my wonders multiplied. And this is the broad sweep of this section. This is a section that really fits together very nicely. And in 7 through 4, if you look at these, Moses has been told by God, you take Aaron and you go and you speak to Pharaoh everything that I tell you to say. In verse 3, look, I will harden Pharaoh's heart that I may multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt. There is the purpose for the hardening of Pharaoh's heart. It's not just simply that God is capricious and mean and unfair. God has a purpose, so that I will multiply my signs and wonders in the lands of Egypt. And here's the promise, Moses. Pharaoh will not listen to you. He says that in verse 4. Pharaoh will not listen to you. Why? Because I've hardened his heart. Then I will lay my hand on Egypt. I will bring out my host, my people, the sons of Israel, from the land of Egypt by great judgments. There's the great purpose in all of chapter 7 through 11. So you can lay down the purpose right there. And if you go back to 11, if you go look at the end of this section, chapter 11, verses 9 and 10, and look what he says there, it's amazing, because he says in 9 and 10, then Pharaoh said, the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh will not listen to you. Why won't he listen to you? So that my wonders will be multiplied in the land of Egypt. I got a purpose here. And Moses and Aaron performed all these wonders. This is a summary of all of 7 and 11, that little statement. They did everything that God said to do, and God performed all these wonders before Pharaoh. Yet the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the sons of Israel go out of his land. Just like God said. Notice he says in 7:3-4, I will harden Pharaoh's heart, Pharaoh will not listen. 11, 9, and 10, Pharaoh will not listen. The Lord hardened his heart. The Lord does this. He hardens his heart. People who know how God works and who really believe in God, they just go, yeah, God hardened his heart. Because God is in charge. And what you find out in 7 through 11 is that man's will never overrules God's will. And God's plan is to reveal his signs and wonders. And how is he going to do it? By hardening Pharaoh's heart. God being sovereign, God being in charge, one of the responses he could have had to Pharaoh, as soon as Pharaoh said, I'm not listening to Moses, God could have struck him dead. But he didn't. He continues to use him, and he continues to really be gracious toward him. Well, let's go into this section here. Let's go look at the first sign miracle. This is the first sign miracle. And God says, you're going to do this to show Pharaoh that you really are empowered by me, the God named Yahweh. Chapter 7, 8 through 12, this is validating Moses. Pharaoh's going to ask you to perform a miracle, and Pharaoh does. So if you look at 7:8, Pharaoh speaks and says, work a miracle. Aaron throws his rod down, the rod becomes a serpent. Then look what happens in verse 11. Pharaoh also called for the wise men and the sorcerers, and as a group, they're called the magicians of Egypt. Now, this doesn't mean they're illusionists. This means they are priests of the religion, and they have satanic power. And so they have what's called secret arts or mystery arts, and their religion is based on the mystery religion. Now, when did the mystery religion start?
Babylon.
Great civil religion started in Babylon. It's been just carried forth into Egypt. So these are workers of secret arts. So they're able to perform the same kind of sign miracle that Moses performed. But they're doing it through the power of Satan, not through the power of God. Because look in verse 12. They each one threw down his staff and they turned into serpents. Aaron's single serpent, which was a staff, swallowed up their staffs. Paul says there's two of these guys have names, Jannes and Jambres. And he mentions them in 2 Timothy chapter 3. And he mentions them because he says this is what false teachers are like. They're sent here to deceive. What they say and what they do looks a lot like what God says and what God does, but it's false. So you look at this. Pharaoh says, perform a miracle. They throw a staff down, becomes a serpent. His two guys come in, they throw their staffs down, they become serpents. But Aaron's staff eats their serpents. Pharaoh looks at this and says, they're essentially the same. So look at verse 13. Pharaoh's heart was hardened and he did not listen to them as the Lord has said. You're both, to me, you're both the same. The miracle really is not the staff turning into a serpent. That's not the miracle that God intends to show as the sign miracle.
It is.
But eating the other serpents and then turning back into a staff and going back into Aaron's hand, that's the miracle. That's God saying, I have power over these priests and Satan, who Satan is represented by a serpent. So that's the miracle. That's the real thing. Pharaoh's heart became hard and he would not listen to them, just as the Lord said. Now, the problem with some of your translations, it says Pharaoh's heart was hardened, like it took place, like someone else did that to him. No, he hardened. He resolved not to listen. I want to do some grammar real quick. This verb is called intransitive. It can't take an object. Pharaoh's heart was hardened. That's him hardening it. It's intransitive. What's intransitive mean? Can't take a direct object. So it's not Pharaoh hardened his heart, because that'd be a transitive. Heart would be an object. It's no. Pharaoh hardened. Literally, that's all you have to say. He became firm in his resolve. Intransitive is like he laughed or I laugh. You don't laugh something. You don't laugh an object. I don't laugh and something comes out of my mouth. You just laugh. Transitive takes an object. Right, go back to verse 3. I will harden Pharaoh's heart. That word for harden is transitive. It takes an object. I, the subject, will harden, the verb, the object, his heart. It's a different word. It's a word that means I will make it more difficult. The word for hard in verse 13 is the word to become very firm in your resolve, to become firm. And now 14, God says Pharaoh's heart is stubborn. There's a different word for hardness. Your translation, some of your translations might say hard. Later on, this word is going to be translated as hard. And that word doesn't mean to firm your resolve. That word means to exalt yourself. It's the word kavod. In Hebrew, is literally heavy. It's the word for glory. And it's the same word used for God in his glory. So what Pharaoh's doing in 14 is glorifying himself over the word of God. So you get all these nuances of these word hard here. God says, I'm going to make it more difficult for him to listen to me. And Pharaoh's going to just harden himself and harden his resolve against Moses. And he's going to exalt himself over Moses, and in fact, in doing that, exalt himself over God. And so God's going to come around and say, okay, I'm going to harden him then. So this is a process that takes place. And this process is going to begin with plagues. And the first three plagues are 7:14 through 8:19. They involve blood, frogs, and gnats. It starts to get a little humorous because the Nile is called the bloodstream of Osiris by the Egyptians. So the Nile is his bloodstream. And from Osiris, this great god who provides everything for the Egyptians, the nation of Egypt would not exist if it were not for the Nile. So if this is the bloodstream of Osiris, the Lord says, okay, let's turn it into blood. In the fall of the year, the Nile would flood. And when the Nile would flood, the water would turn red as it went out over the land. But it remained somewhat drinkable, and it remained livable for fish and other aquatic life. This is not the natural flooding phenomenon that occurs. I want you to look at verse 15. Go to Pharaoh in the morning as he's going out to the water. Station yourself to meet him on the bank of the Nile. And you will take your staff in your hand that was turned into a serpent, and you're going to hold it over the water, and it's going to turn blood red. Now, why is he going out to the Nile, and why does Moses want to go out there and meet him out there? Because they would go out to the Nile to worship. Pharaoh would have his morning devotions on the bank of the Nile River. Bathing in the Nile empowered his worship. So Moses and Aaron met him out there as he prepared to worship Osiris and the other river gods. Because there's other gods in the river. There's fish gods, there's frog gods, and there's a hymn that they would sing. And I'm just going to give you one line from the hymn. The hymn to the gods of the Nile. Here it is. The Nile, the bringer of food. The Nile, rich in provisions. The Nile, the creator of all good. The Nile, the Lord of majesty. This is Osiris. And the Nile, sweet of fragrance. So, see, no matter whether it was flooding or not, and there were certain times of the year where it flooded, but it never became toxic. Look what happens to it now. Look at verse 17. You shall know that I'm the Lord. Behold, I will strike the water that is in the Nile with the staff that is in my hand, and it shall be turned to blood. Now look at verse 18. 18 said, and the fish that are in the Nile will die. And the Nile will become foul, and the Egyptians will find difficulty in drinking water from the Nile. So he tells Aaron to do this. Go out and they do this. They turn the Nile into blood. It says in verse 21 that the result is that the fish in the Nile died. The Nile became foul, so the Egyptians could not drink the water from the Nile, and the blood was throughout all the land of Egypt. This is not what happens in the normal course of flooding. This is totally off the scale. Now, you got to think about this. The guy on the street, he has no idea what's going on. One guy is making decisions that's affecting every other person in the nation. Everybody suffers because of his decisions. And this reminds me of Annas and Caiaphas, when Jesus came and spoke and worked his sign miracles, and the decisions they made affected every Jewish person in that time. Look at 22. The magicians did the same thing with their secret arts, and what's the result? Pharaoh firmed his resolve. These priests weren't helping, but they were doing the same kind of miracle. They were not able to stop the ill effects, the toxicity and the smell, turn the blood back into water, nor did they have any control over how long this would last. And part of the miracle is in verse 25. 7 days passed after the Lord had struck the Nile, and then it was over. So they would go 7 days. How would they exist? The same way they existed during the flood period when the water became murky and they really didn't want to use it for drinking. What would they do? They would make beer and wine, store it up for these flood seasons. They would drink beer and wine. So then, still with the Nile River here, because when we're dealing with the frogs, we're dealing with the goddess Het. And she's related to Osiris and related to the Nile River, because the frogs came out of the Nile. As the flooding receded, the frogs would come to the banks and begin to sing their frog songs. And it was a good sound for them, because that meant the flooding is gone and the land is now rich. The frogs are really looked upon as a blessing. So God's going to take this great blessing that they normally look on in their culture, and he's going to do something really, really bad. He's going to create so many frogs that they're going to pile up. They're going to be in everything. Look what he says in verse 6. Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land. Now look what happens in verse 7. So the magicians do the same thing. Now there's a different result, however. Before, when the magicians would do the same thing, Pharaoh would go, I'm sticking with those guys. Now look what he does. Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, ask the Lord that he remove the frogs. I'll let the people go if you get rid of the frogs. You can go sacrifice to the Lord. Go over to verse 12. Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh. Moses cried to the Lord concerning the frogs. And 13, the Lord did according to the word of Moses. He gets rid of the frogs. The frogs all die. They die out of the houses, the courts, and the fields. They pile them up in heaps. And the land became foul. But when Pharaoh saw there was relief, oh, crisis over? It doesn't say he firmed his resolve. Now it's going back to the word kavod. When Pharaoh saw there was relief, he exalts himself and doesn't listen. I am still greater than Moses, Aaron, and God. Pharaoh is a god in Egypt. So he's going to exalt himself. The next plague comes, the supernatural miracles that the magicians work are over. The satanic miracles are done. Now we come to the last one, the gnats. Gnats are the god Khnum. That's the god of tiny things. Gnats, fleas, mosquitoes. 8:16 through 19. Aaron stretches out his staff, strikes the dust of the earth, they cover everything. 18 is the magicians try to perform the same thing, but they couldn't do it. So now their power has come to an end. But there were gnats on man and beast. So the magicians go to Pharaoh, and they say, this is the finger of God. Well, they got it wrong. No, this is the hand of God. Remember what God said to Moses, by my strong hand I'm going to bring you out? This is more than just a finger. But they say, this is the finger of God. They're starting to get some glimmer of what God has said is going to happen. They're going to know who I am. But Pharaoh's heart was hardened. That means, goes back to our word, he firmed himself in his resolve. I don't care that you couldn't do it. I don't care what you say. He's now starting to firm his resolve against his own priests. He did not listen to them, just as the Lord has said. The priests couldn't perform the same miracle, so the priests are discredited. You think, okay, if my priests are discredited, maybe I should change my mind? No, he doesn't. He becomes firmer in his resolve, even though they say, Pharaoh, look, this is the finger of God. Now, discrediting them discredited all of the gods that they represented. So this really discredits their entire religion. Pharaoh used these priests to control the minds and the hearts of the people, not only religiously, but politically. They couldn't control these little gnats. They couldn't control these little fleas. Caused the people to question, do these guys really have any power? Remember, these plagues are affecting the guy on the street, and he doesn't know what's going on there in the high palace. We come to the next three plagues. This is 8:20 to 9:12. There's flies. Now, this is flies and bugs. This is the sacred scarab. This is really important, this scarab. Because the scarab beetle is what's placed over the heart when a person dies to protect the heart in the day of judgment. What's it protect it from? It keeps the heart covered and hardened. So now you begin to see Pharaoh's dilemma. In their religion, you want to keep your heart hardened. Now we're going to go into look at the Hall of Judgment next week. I'm going to take you through the scarab beetle and how it's used in what's called the Egyptian Hall of Judgment. We're going to skip over it this week and get to it next week. But I want to introduce you to this idea that the scarab beetle, which is one of the insects that's being discredited here in this plague, central to their religion in terms of what is it I must have in order to enter into life eternal, this Egyptian bliss in the afterlife. So let's look at 8:20. Moses and Aaron go out early in the morning and meet Pharaoh, just as God has told him to do, as he comes out to the water. Why is he coming out to the water?
His devotions,
his worship. So it's the same thing over again. And they come out with the same command, let my people go. If you will not let my people go, he says in 21, I will send swarms of insects on you and your servants and every house in Egypt. 22, but on that day... Now, this is a change in the narrative. Now he's going to do something different. On that day, I will set apart the land of Goshen where my people are living so that no swarms of insects will be there. Now God's saying, I'm going to give you a reason why I'm going to do this in order that you may know that I, the Lord, am in the midst of your land. In 22, he's saying, Pharaoh, there's something new here. I want you to know the new purpose of the plagues is that I want you to know I'm here. And he says in verse 23, I'm going to put a division between my people and your people, and tomorrow this sign will occur. So toward 24, the Lord did so. Great swarms of insects come into the house of Pharaoh. This is affecting his house. And in the house of his servants and the land, and it was laid waste because of the swarms of insects in the land of Egypt. So Pharaoh called for Moses and said, go sacrifice to your God within the land. But Moses says, no, I can't do that. For we sacrifice to the Lord our God, and we sacrifice things that are an abomination to you. If we sacrifice an abomination to the Egyptians before them, right in front of them in their land, they'll stone us. They'll put our lives in danger. We must go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God as he commands us. Why 3 days? Because that's beyond the reach of the Egyptian people. And we want to be out beyond that reach. Because the animals we sacrifice, you don't sacrifice. And the animals that the Hebrews would sacrifice are holy to the Egyptians. The Egyptians also had ways they sacrificed their cattle and their rams. Very, very meticulous. Had to be in a temple, absolutely clean. The priests shaved their heads, they shaved their bodies. They had linen clothes, white linen clothes. If they saw a Hebrew slaughtering a cow or something that they held to be sacred, they would consider that an abomination. Now, on the frogs, even if an Egyptian killed a frog, that was a capital crime. Even if an Egyptian killed a frog by accident, that was a capital crime. Now, what happened to all the frogs? God killed them all. And they died, and they were heaped in piles. This is their sacred frog. Who are you going to put in jail now? So 28, Pharaoh says, okay, I'll let you go, that you may sacrifice to the Lord your God in the wilderness. Only you shall not go very far away. Make supplication for me. So Moses said, behold, I'm going out from you, and I'll make supplication so that the swarms of insects will go away. Only do not let Pharaoh deal deceitfully again. Don't lie to me again in not letting the people go, because you said you would before and you didn't do it. Don't do it again. So Moses went out and he made supplication. Verse 31, the Lord did as Moses asked. This is how the Lord honors Moses. Moses asks and God does it. Pharaoh's response, Pharaoh hardened his heart this time also, and he did not let the people go. He exalted himself above God again. This is the word kavod, to glorify himself. I might have told you I'm going to let you go. You fixed my problem. I'm not letting you go. So now Pharaoh's got to face another one, the cattle. Now here's where this plague is going to affect the entire economy. This has an effect on personal property. This has an effect on people's lives now. Again, this affects the guy on the street. So the cattle represent Apis, the bull, and Hathor, the cow, both sacred. And if these animals were sacrificed, they were sacrificed to these gods, and again, in a very meticulous manner. Remember when we looked at the pharaohs and his names, this guy's name is Amenhotep. This particular pharaoh worshipped Apis, the bull. This was his favorite god. Apis, the bull, represented strength. And he also worshipped the cow, because the cow and the bull go together, and the cow provides divine milk or sustenance. And milk is what they consider to be the drink that would give your skin its glow and your teeth its whiteness. So the cow goddess is Hathor, and she represents love and beauty. So he wants to be a strong, loving, beautiful man. So he worships these two gods. Well, if you look at 9:1-7, Moses comes to him and says, let my people go so that they can serve me. If you refuse to let them go, here's what I'm going to do. There's going to be a very severe pestilence on your livestock. Now, this would be all animals. It's going to be on the horses, on the donkeys, on the camels, the herds, even the flocks. But the Lord will make a distinction between the livestock of Israel and the livestock of Egypt so that nothing will die of all that belongs to the sons of Israel. And the Lord set a definite time. He said, tomorrow the Lord will do this thing in the land. It's going to be tomorrow. So the Lord did that thing, and all the livestock of Egypt died, but the livestock of the sons of Israel, no one died. Well, Pharaoh, he's got to really see if this is true. So he sends somebody out there to find out. He finds out in verse 7, not one of the livestock of Israel was dead. You think, boy, that's going to change his mind. That's going to change his resolve. It doesn't. Pharaoh's heart was hardened. Again, exalted And he did not let the people go. So, see, this is a process of exalting himself, in addition to firming his resolve. You have both words being used interchangeably. Well, that doesn't end it. Boils. And boils represented the god Serapis, who's the god of health and healing. Look at 8. The Lord said to Moses, take for yourself handfuls of soot from a kiln, and you throw that toward the sky. Let's let Pharaoh see you doing that. Furnaces and kilns are what the Hebrews used to make brick to build the buildings that he was having them build. The kiln and the furnace became a symbol of Israel's slavery. In fact, later on, God will say to you, I formed you in the furnace of bondage of Egypt. So God converts the suffering of the Israelites into the suffering of the Egyptians. The magicians, the princes, or the priests, everybody's affected. But the Hebrews aren't affected. So, verse 9, it will become fine dust over all the land and will become boils breaking out with sores on man and beast through all the land of Egypt. Moses takes the soot, throws it up in the air, becomes boils breaking out and sores of man and beast. And the magicians could not stand before Moses. What's the point here? The point is that they were now helpless on their sick beds with these massive boils over their bodies. They couldn't do anything. This completely discredits their healing power and the healing power of their god Serapis. What's Pharaoh's response? Well, Pharaoh doesn't really get to have a response, because verse 12, the Lord's going to take over from Pharaoh, and the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not listen to them, just as the Lord had spoken to Moses. When he writes this word here, he takes the word that is intransitive and makes it transitive. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh. The Lord strengthened his resolve. Pharaoh started the process. God's going to do now what Romans 1 tells us. If that's what you want, that's what I'll give you. So the lesson here is that when one ignores or resists God and decides he's going to be hard, I'm going to laugh in God's face, I'm going to be hard in God's face, that the Lord will confirm that resistance and make belief impossible. There'll be like a curtain hanging over your eyes. There'll be like plugs in your ears. And isn't this what Jesus said when he said, this is why I'm going to use parables, because of the hardness of your hearts, just like Isaiah said. Your people are so hard of heart, they will not listen. They have their hands over their ears, they cannot hear. And God says, I'm going to make these people hard of heart. So we have this verse. The Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart and he would not listen to Moses and Aaron, just as the Lord had said. Where did he say that? Back in 7:3. Where did he say that? In 11:9 and 10. 7:13. Yet Pharaoh's heart became hard and he would not listen to him, just as the Lord has said. Pharaoh starts this process off. And how is the Lord hardening his heart? And how is it that Pharaoh becomes firm in his resolve? Because Moses is talking to him and he's seeing these sign miracles and he's resisting all this truth. And as he resists, God lets him go until the point God then takes over and is going to make it impossible for him to believe anything. Next week, we're going to pick up the next three plagues, but that's tied to a final warning. The last plague is going to be the one that God had told Moses back in the desert, I'm going to have to kill his son before he lets you go. Moses is going to warn Pharaoh that that's what's going to happen. The question is, will he listen? No, he won't. From where we are, 9:13, all the way to the end of chapter 11, we still have some time if anybody worked through some of this.